Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. I grew up in the greater Seattle area and have lived in the Pacific Northwest my whole life. There is a wonderful, vibrant music scene up here with an incredibly welcoming community. Growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast will explore the Northwest music scene, how to navigate it, the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. This is Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. I'm really excited about this episode for a multitude of reasons. My friend Paul's coming on the pod, which is reason enough to be excited. He's a great guy, well-spoken, passionate about the local music scene. But further, we're coming at things from a different perspective. Over the past few months, I've been interviewing singer-songwriters, producers, band members, music photographers, and this week we're talking to the person that all of them are catering to, the general listener. Because he doesn't have original music of his own, he requested a song by Dude York, a band signed to Seattle's own Sub Pop Records, and as a result, I had to go through the licensing process to get permissions, which opened up a whole new avenue of music that we haven't explored yet. It was a great learning experience for me and will be leading to some really exciting new material for this podcast, so stay tuned for that. But without further ado, let's get the perspective of a fan and a member of the media. Here comes episode 9. Welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. Today's friend of the podcast has been writing for the Seattle Chinese Times going on 7 years now, a publication for which he also ran an e-gamer podcast. He is an avid music fan who loves alternative rock and, quote, dabbles in hip-hop. And most notably, he was featured in Macklemore's And We Danced music video for, quote, like 2 seconds in one scene. Please welcome the man I immediately turned to upon the release of any information pertaining to Marvel or DC comic movies, Paul Agnelli.
Thank you. Great introduction.
Yeah. I was pretty proud of that when I was trying to think of, okay, how do we kickstart this thing? So
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Thanks, man. So this podcast, as you know, but maybe some first-time listeners don't, is that we've been focusing predominantly on the Seattle music scene. That said, I think a lot of what we're going to talk about is universal and will apply to anyone who's trying to make it. And I want to get your perspective as a fan and someone who pays attention closely to the local scene, how people get to you. How do local bands get their music in front of you? Where are you listening? Because I think a lot of us musicians are like, I'm going to record a song and put it on Spotify and I'm going to blow up because it's a good song.
Right. It's really easy to get into that mindset now, especially because everything's so accessible.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. It gets saturated because you don't need a record label now to record an album and get it out into the ether. But at the same time, it makes the discovery process for people a lot harder. There's not like a central, I guess there is a central place to go, but not necessarily to connect.
Right, or to get it out there. So I think it's from the outside looking in for, you know, bands, you know, or anything music related, how to kind of get started is while it is important to go to that channel, like you said, you know, go record, go put out the music, throw it on a million websites and hope for the best. Mm-hmm. There's also kind of like this funny follow-up you have to do where once you make that thing, then you got to go make it big in your crowd. Mm-hmm. You got to get it known around there. And so a kind of good link with that is, you know, you find people who do stuff. It may not be their job to write for a paper. It's like they don't get paid for it, but they have their own little blog, or they're really popular on Instagram, or like they, mm-hmm. you know, do something on the side for fun, but like get your thing involved in their thing that they do for fun.
Yeah.
In some way. Like I have a buddy who does comedy on the side and for stand-up stuff, and I'll plug his stuff all day. I haven't had time to go to a show, but it's like, cause I know him and I support him. Like I'll, you know, share his stuff he posts or whatever and go from there. So, and then beyond that is it's so easy to just kind of be like the, you know, slide the card, like, hey, I'm so-and-so, check out my stuff, go listen to it.
Right.
And all that. But I think it's another thing to like, to get involved with what that other person does you're talking to, because you don't want to just throw yourself out there to a million people, but you want to hear what they do and hear how you can be like, oh, well, what I do kind of applies to what you're into. Do you think maybe we could do something like that? Because then it makes it a little more mutual. It's more of a conversation versus you just like pitching your stuff all day to them.
Yeah.
And they just sit there like, well, what do I do?
Is it the whole what's in it for me sort of thing? I was in sales for a bit, and that was the biggest thing. I was, when you call on someone, just, I have this, you should buy it. Like, before they realize what's in it for them. Even if it's like, yeah, I write a blog, but why are you what I should focus on?
Right.
And if it... And, as someone who writes for like a publication, do you get that a lot of people reaching out being like, hey, can you just write about this or write about me, focus on me?
Yeah, I've had some. Yeah, because people know that I write. It's not my primary job. So it's something I just do for fun. But it just happens to also be in a like publication paper.
Right.
But yeah, people reach out and say, hey, can you write about this? Like, hey, I've got this thing. And it's like, I can't really. But like, right. I can write on like social media about it, but I can't write to their site about this, just because it's not an official like sanctioned thing. Like, I didn't get a request from the paper to do this. I don't have, like, very few people have that ultimate kind of freedom.
Right.
It's only going to be on social media avenues. You can't just like go to someone who like part-time writes for The Stranger or something and be like, hey, like, look, you write about this thing. And it's like, I know your column relates to this. And it's like, not like, it's kind of like what I do.
Right.
Like, you can't really impose on my, like, what little creativity I have.
Yeah. Nice. As far as that channel is concerned, if there is, do you have any advice on, like, how people can get press, or is there a right way to go about doing so?
I think the right way to go about doing so and getting impressed is you've got to be at an event, or you've got to be at a place where there are those people who can like write about an experience, and they may not even be in press, but just people who went somewhere, saw something, and can share word of mouth or make a post about it or something like that. I think that's the best base level. And I would say, I would encourage just like going to any, you know, any shows that you can, going to any like markets or events or any, like there's a ton of spaces to go like get heard and do that. But then once you play, like, you got to network.
Yeah.
You can't just get up and play and hope for the best. You got to go and you got to market yourself, and you got to sell yourself and what you do, but have conversations with all these people and make it not so much about a, how can I get to their space, but how can I help their space?
Right.
And then maybe how, you know, you can help them in return, something like that.
Totally. And that's something that I know when I started playing when I was like 16, I totally had the mindset of, oh, we have a show, we're going to go play. And the first time like 60 people showed up. We're like, great, this means next time there's going to be 120 people.
Right.
And all these bands are going to love us. But I didn't talk to the other bands. I was terrified. I was like 16. My brothers were 13 and 10. So we were like literally children coming and playing these shows with like grown adults.
Yeah.
And back, like, knowing what I know now, I would be telling that kid, like, go talk to every lead singer of that band. Like, also, you're not good yet.
Right.
So, like, you need to get to know these people, and they need to like you. And it, and not as, like, a mutual exploitation. You can't do it by yourself. Like, there's nobody that has made it from the local scene all the way up to, like, the biggest pop stars. They have full teams of people, and no one's going to jump on board if, A, you don't make an effort, and then, B, if you're not pleasant to work with in some capacity. So like in media, and you had your own podcast, has that influenced the way that you view art and other artists and such?
It's interesting. It's there's points where, since I mean, our podcast was only for about a little over half a year, so it wasn't for forever. And the writing that I do is pertains to, you know, movie reviews. But it's interesting where there's some avenues where like, I'll look at something through that kind of like critical lens, but I usually, it's trickling to other avenues right now. It's when I go to a movie that kind of, it starts to come through where I'm like, yeah, that was, you know, a high six or whatever, but then it's like, I can go through all the reasons, but same for shows and stuff. There's weird avenues that I'll find where it's just nitpicky things.
Yeah.
Like with, you know, I saw one band where they just had a fantastic energy, but I was like, there was almost too much energy where the music was lost.
Oh, interesting.
So there's weird stuff like that where it's like, yes, the environment, the crowd, everything was phenomenal, but it was like you had too much energy output for my taste. You
know, right.
You had too much energy in dance, like, you know, just throwing yourself around the stage to actually focus on like the tone, the vocals, the music.
Interesting.
So it kind of, it goes so much of other different perspectives like that, and even to some avenues of, but then, and some people are just way, but like, you know, another band where the music is good, but they have no presence.
Right.
You know, there's no presence. They don't interact. They don't engage. It's just like, maybe that's who you are, but also like, you don't, it just kind of leaves a sour taste in people's mouth.
Absolutely. I went and saw the California Honey Drops last night, actually, and they were like the perfect combination, I think, of sound. I saw them at the Crocodile, which it was actually my first show there, and the sound was incredible.
Yeah.
But then they did have that perfect mix of bringing the crowd into the fold,
yep.
And then they did a lot of improv stuff, so they clearly showed off their musicianship. And I'm finding I almost like smaller shows better than stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I do love stadium shows because I'm a sucker for like big pyro and right. fireworks, and I love that. But what I'm finding is the artists that are in those shows don't interact at all. They just kind of song to next song to next song, and mm-hmm. they kind of lose me. I'm like, unless you sound better than anyone I've ever seen live,
right?
Probably not going to be the best show I've ever seen, like in at least from my personal lens,
right?
But
and it's that critical lens, and that's where it's funny when you see someone who's a true master of the works, and then that critical lens, those views and like biases you have get shattered. Because an example of that, the bigger shows where you lose the personal touch, the two I've seen that kind of stand out were Paul McCartney. And then Foo Fighters, because Foo Fighters, they both make it very personal, but it was like Paul McCartney. I was like, this guy's, you know, he's old, you know, whatever. He'll play good music. It'll be fun. But it was like, these were the guys who like invented big stadium shows.
Yeah.
So when there's one person in the crowd who just yells out when he's trying to talk, he'll be like, he'll call them out.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And he engages with the audience on that level, or he'll point to someone's sign in the front row, or, you know, mm-hmm. he'll call people on stage who are really like charismatic. So there's people who are good at that craft where it's like, oh, they're a true master of the stadium show. Like, it's mm-hmm. not just like their music's really good.
Yeah.
But it's like, they know what they're doing. Or like Muse, where it's like, they've got that whole technical aspect of like drones flying around when I saw them, where it's so it's like, yes, their music is really good. And it's like, yeah, they're not, you know, having local conversations of like, you know, hey Seattle, how are you doing? But it's like, they put on a spectacle that's like,
mm-hmm.
Once you get to that critical lens, like you were saying, it's just like you start to appreciate a lot of other things than just like, oh, the music was good.
Right.
It's like, here's these other things that actually made it much more than just a concert.
Yeah. And I think that translates to the people trying to get started too. The most gut-wrenching thing for me is when I see an artist of when there's only like 10 people in the crowd and they start commenting on that. Or like, well, you know, we played to a bigger crowd last time, but like, we're going to give it all we have. It's like, you should be giving it all you have anyway.
Right.
And don't tell me you're not going to
give
it my all, or that you can do something very different with 10 people and get them super involved. And then they'll go home, tell their friends how fantastic it was or how fun. And if you can give them something to walk away with, I think it's that much more valuable.
Oh, easily.
And so it is just kind of, funny to me when I hear those conversations, or people just get downtrodden right off the bat. It's like, nobody opened to 100, 200, well, maybe some if they're really lucky and had like recordings, but nobody went to their first show and crushed it and everyone loved them and their next show was 2,000 people.
Right.
Like, it doesn't work like that, for the points we've brought up.
And you play to your strengths.
Oh, yeah.
You always want us, like, whenever you're starting out, whatever, what field you're in, whatever, you know, whether you're, you know, producing, you know, marketing, or, you know, actually making the music, you always want to play to your strengths first and then broaden yourself from there.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that's where people see like, oh, this person truly shines at this thing, and then they're known for that thing. Like, become an expert and professional in the thing you're best at first, and then you'll soak up the rest later. That's
totally
what I'm a firm believer in with that.
Yeah. Spreading yourself too thin, like, I'm gonna do a live show and a record and this, and I haven't done any of them before, is
nope.
not the way to go.
Can't do it.
Yeah. So as like a music fan, as it pertains to the local scene, how do you find out about new bands, or where do you go to try and find them?
So it's a funny blend. It started off when I was in high school. I thought I had a grip on music, like as a whole. And it mostly gravitated towards a lot of like pop genres of different, like the pop aspects of different genres. So it was all like very like, you know, popular bands across these different genres, but I never like dug into it. So for local scene, it started with actually my mom. So,
oh, right on.
She's still really into, she'll go to shows by herself all the time, and she'll like, you know, plug names, or she'll always have the, like their CD in their car or something. And she reads The Stranger. So she's always, you know, in the know, she'll very aware of what's going on, or she'll listen to KEXP, and then that rubbed off on me, because now I listen to it at work like almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of weird not well, weird. Yeah, it's out there. Music comes in where it's like, I would have never heard of this person had I been listening, you know, here and now.
Right.
And it's just, I think those local stations, those local magazines, or even just kind of going to a festival, if you will, like, or some show where there's a bunch of bands playing, like a battle of the bands sort of scenario or what have you. But the, I think it's those local stations like KEXP or whatever those may be, or those local, you know, magazines where some bands get highlighted in those aspects. But also what led me to a lot of other bands locally was discovering, like some of that historically. So nothing, not in the present,
right?
But my director is a big, my old director at work is a big music guy. He used to work for like Raff City Music way back in the day, nice. Which was kind of interesting. But he, so he pitched a book to me, that was called Our Band Could Be Your Life. And it follows like Black Flag, like Husker Du, and like a bunch of those kind of like more hardcore bands. But it was how Black Flag basically roadmapped the U.S. and was like, hey, here's a place where you can crash. Here's a local community center where you can play. So bands had some sort, bands who weren't big had some sort of guide, like template.
That's incredible.
And so this, and so it was from that book that I was like, oh, I should listen to these bands. And it was like, you know, some, yeah, just sounded really awful, but then some I'd find I really liked. And then from there, it was able to find bands similar to that, where it was like, oh, here's, you know, from Husker Du, you know, here's some other like, you know, seedy bands from the Seattle area that kind of, you know, tried to do that sound or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one that was a little more recently. I haven't gotten around to fully reading it yet, but called, I think it's called Meet Me in the Bathroom. It's about, so Our mm-hmm. Band Could Be Your Life encompasses like 80s to basically like the 80s kind of mm-hmm. a thing. And then Maybe in the Bathroom is like 90s to 2000s.
Okay.
But it's kind of neat because the Our Band Could Be Your Life ends with like Sonic Youth and Nirvana to an aspect. And then okay. Maybe in the Bathroom picks up with like, you know, I think it was like some of the more current bands. I can't remember who else was on that bill, but it was it was books like that where like you read these things, you see these things of those, you know, lesser known people, but the ones who still like the ones that other artists talk about.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, shout out to, you know, CBGB for hosting those bands that influenced us. It's like, well, one, what was CBGB? You know, two, who are these bands? So mm-hmm. it's a trickle effect.
Yeah.
I think staying locally, you don't have to go and find every single local magazine or every single like radio station and listen all day. It helps. But then like, I think just like finding bands that are similar to those ones that you like,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of going from there, because there's tons of outlets for music. Like you said, so many places to throw your music up.
Right. You'd mentioned that, you know, you've got these outlets. When it comes to specific genres, are there certain venues that you look into for certain sounds, or is that not really relevant when you're looking for new music?
It depends on the artist. Venues do come into play. I mean, there's some places I just avoid like the plague, but mm-hmm. like if there's someone going there's really big, I'll give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there's definitely an appeal that comes into play where it's like, oh, I could see so-and-so at the Crocodile, like you said, like, because that's just such a nice venue. It's small. Mm-hmm. It's intimate. And that is a selling point. There's always like one or two venues where it's like, oh, it's there. I'd prefer it was at this place.
Yeah.
And that might be the hindering point of me going to a show, which is kind of a bummer to say, but you're right. There is.
It's totally true, though.
Yeah.
There's certain places that have literally no parking, and then on top of that, no way to like get there to where like an Uber isn't even that convenient.
Right.
And that is the same thing for me. It's a deterrent for a show. And I feel bad. Sometimes I'll get reached out to directly from someone in a band and they're like, hey, come check us out here. I'm like, great. I don't know if I can physically make it. Like, it's, you know, it's like an investment if you Uber, because half the time the shows are after hours where you can park, but some of the spots are nothing.
Right.
And that's nothing of the artist's fault. Even sometimes the venues, it's just living in a big city.
Right.
But to get out there, it's tough. Like, I really like the Fremont scene venues, because I feel like it's, in general, just pretty laid back. But the venues are all accessible.
Right.
You start getting towards downtown and you really gotta pick and choose, especially if it's a slightly bigger show or a bigger local artist.
Right.
You know that it's like, if it's hard enough during the day to park, and then there's going to be 600 to 800 people trying to also come see you.
Right.
And 50% even are trying to park around here. It's like you're parking
way over.
Yeah. 6, 8, 10, 12 blocks away,
right.
Which is tough, but.
But there, yeah, there is, it, like you said, there's some things you can't help, but I think when you're selecting the venue, try to think of those things in mind when you are going through that, because that's, like you said, like, that's, if you don't like it, no one else, like, obviously other people might not like it too.
Yeah, that's so true. And we had an instance when really early on, we were just trying to get shows, and the biggest mistake I made as of emailing everybody, do you have an opening spot? Do you, like, we'll jump on anything, whatever.
Right.
And the show ended up falling through because there was a band that was touring, but they were like this hardcore metal band. Uh-huh. And here we are, like, three brothers playing like classic rock music.
Right.
And I look back and I'm like really glad it fell through, because I listen, I'm like, nobody going to that show would have liked what we do.
Right.
And then anybody that was expecting a bill representative of our music would have been thoroughly disappointed. But it's something that you have to take into account, because sometimes it's so hard to book a show and get everyone's schedules to align, whatever that may be, especially if not everyone is doing music full time. You have a day job or something,
right,
like that. You've got to travel. It's like, I have commitments that I can't just put aside. So all of that said, when you get the email that's like, yeah, I want to be on the show, you're just like, yes, absolutely. But you got to think about those things too, because as you've said, you're branding yourself throughout this whole process.
Right.
And you've got to keep that in mind. But.
But also space is space, so if it's all you can get,
true,
then, you know.
Sometimes you do just got to take it, but at the same time, it's like, still think about in that moment how you're going to position yourself. And it even comes down to your set list. Like, if you're playing with a heavier band, you might want to move more towards your high energy songs, and you might not want to play like two ballads in a row.
Right, exactly.
Something like that. Going back to what you were talking about of the energy not matching the music and whatnot.
Right.
But
it's funny, because when you get to be some level of... or even not, I don't know if it was a really interesting thing where I saw Smashing Pumpkins at Paramount, and it was mostly the original lineup, but it was funny because it wasn't like Smashing Pumpkins, like Billy Corgan's like, you know, certified musical genius,
mm-hmm.
but he's such a musical genius where it's like he's got obviously very different phases of his life, and it's not like he's some cheap, like, you know, 80s band trying to relive that prime time. Like, he is not playing, what's that, Bullet with a Butterfly Wings or whatever. Like, he's not playing that stuff. He's doing like some like nice ballad, you know, whatever he likes to do kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was at the show, and like, there was like this guy who kept always like screaming like play Cherub Rock. And it's like, it's like, we've been through five songs, and obviously this is not that kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so even if there's a band that's known for that, it's like, it's kind of whatever. And it was still a fantastic show, but it's like, this isn't his point in time. This isn't their life anymore. Like, so it was just funny to see that, because usually they always try to go back to whatever they're like, you know, what they're known for was. But here's a guy who was like, I just want to celebrate our band as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went through like each of their albums, like the backdrops changed. It was a very great show. I went through like their musical path, but it was like, it was just like all very melodic, different takes of what they had done. And it wasn't, and a lot of their popular songs weren't even there. I think the only one they really did was like Tonight in like 1979.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, he did like covers of Bowie and stuff. It was just like a very beautiful thing. But
that's
like,
incredible.
And I don't know if maybe that was Billy Corgan as like, you know, I am Billy Corgan, I am Smashing Pumpkins, like, I can do what I want. Or that's just them being like, I don't want to play that way.
Right.
You know, it was interesting. That was the first time I've ever really seen a band kind of, you know, somewhat go against their known grain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting thing to think. And I'm sure, you know, smaller bands do what you want. And, and as you work your way up, go from there. But it's just a really interesting, like, oh, this is not Smashing Pumpkins. This is like an evening with Smashing Pumpkins.
It was funny. It wasn't under Led Zeppelin, but I saw Robert Plant at Sasquatch a couple years ago. And that was what was really interesting to me, is obviously he's under his solo artist,
you know,
so it's different, but he did play, I think, two or three Led Zeppelin songs, but it was his own take, so it was the same thing. He had that vibe of, they were like sitting down with their instruments, and I like what you actually just said, it was like an evening with Robert
exactly
Plant and his group. Like, I think they took Black Dog, but they slowed down the riff like to halftime, only played the first half, and it was really cool to see new takes on it. And his voice, for I think he was 72 at the time,
right,
was unreal. And that enough made it an evening. But yeah, if I was just sitting there screaming, like, play the Immigrant Song,
right,
it's like, it did not fit.
It's not going to work. But I think that kind of ties back into, like, for even smaller bands, everybody getting started, is to play to your strengths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here are these people who have gotten older. They could do that stuff, but it's more to their strengths now to do the stuff that they're into mm-hmm. and that they really, that they get excited about. Cause then everybody else can see their like efforts and passion in what they're playing.
Mm-hmm. A local artist that's doing a great job of that and a guest of the podcast is Sarah St. Alban. What she's been doing is she has like this crew that she's with and she does like events. It's not just like a show. There's always like a theme to it. And they've found kind of this niche of I don't want to call it a costume party because it's much more elaborate, much more well put mm-hmm. together than that. But for like Halloween, it was like a night in Neverland. And so everybody, all the musicians on stage dressed up. The people who showed up were decked out. Like I went and I had like a mask and a hat and I was probably one of the most underprepared people, but it's really interesting because they sold out like the Rendezvous mm-hmm. Theater and they're continuing to do these events. And it's a very unique brand mm-hmm. that I'm seeing because you've got to give people a reason to go see you.
Right.
And there's only so many times you can ask all your friends, hey, I got a show coming up. And then another one in a month. Want to come? Like pay $5, $10, $15 to see me. And so I thought that's a really interesting take of like, the reason to go see them in a shorter window, like within a month and a half, is it's a different event. You're going to mm-hmm. get a new vibe, whatever it may be. Sure, new songs will probably get played, but the way it's been marketed is really cool to me. And I think that's something interesting that bands can kind of tap into of, like you said, what's your brand? What's your strength? Clearly they've got a strength around like event planning.
Right.
And they're using it in every time and it's bringing more and more people. They're getting bigger.
Right.
Kind of segueing a little bit mm-hmm. away from that, but as far as local acts, do you have a favorite local act in the greater Seattle area right now?
There is, let's see, favorite local act would, that's a tough one. I think it falls under this act called Thunder Pussy.
Big fan.
Which is, they're really good, and I've seen them, I mean, it's amazing that they're finally recording, and they're finally getting an album out, but it was like there'd been years where they had no album, but they would sell out shows.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. And I mean, when you see them, you get to know it, and you just can, but they're, it's just this, it's this band that, like, shouldn't work, but it does.
Right? I feel the exact same way, because it was that same thing. I remember finding demos on some random site that they had, and they recorded like 2 years ago. And that was the thing. It was like Numos sold out, like Showbox sold out. And I'm right. like, I can't find your recording. So yeah, I know.
You have to go see them. It was this weird space.
Yeah, which I still haven't seen them actually. I wanted to see them when they played, I think it was Numos like 8 months ago mm-hmm. or 10 months ago, something like that. And it was sold out. Like in my head, I didn't put two and two together of like, oh, I'm thinking about going. I've never heard their music. So why isn't everyone else has got to be in the same boat? And there's people who I've seen posts about them. Like clearly they have this following.
Right.
And I heard that they were pretty involved with the guitars from Pearl Jam as well. Yeah. So Mike McCready has been like helping like them kind of craft their sound and they just got signed.
Yep.
And whatnot.
I saw them at, there was a free, KXP did some free outdoor shows over the summer, over by the Science Center at the Mural stage, and they were playing one night, and my girlfriend works by there, so I was like, hey, you know, let's, you know, go see them, you should go see this will be fun. And so they're playing, and it's like getting late into the night. It was summer though, so it was still nice out, but, and then, you know, it's like till end of the evening, they're like, oh, we want to welcome the honorary sixth member of the band, Mike McCready, and then he just comes on stage. It's like, you know, Mural stage, it's a free show, you know, whatever, and they play like a bunch of covers and do some Led Zepp and just like have a lot of fun. But he's very involved, but he also just shows up at the most random places. I saw Cheap Trick at the Puyallup Fair years ago, and he showed up.
Wow.
I know.
It's just like if you come to Seattle, there's a good chance Mike McCready
is probably hanging out behind the stage, just waiting.
He's actually just upstairs right now, eating bagels.
But it's Thunder Pussy's up there because of that unique appeal where they do this homage act to an older style of music. Mm-hmm. But they make it their own so well, and they have such a good range. The other one that I haven't seen that I would love to is Hobosexual, mm-hmm. which is one of the best band names.
Yeah.
It's genius.
And so, to me, very Seattle.
Yes, and so very Seattle. But it's these two guys who they do, I'm just kind of now learning about them, but they do like kind of concept albums, if you will. And I just bought their latest one, but it's on its way to my house. But they're, it's funny. Once you find like one band, then it's only a matter of time until you find others in the area like it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a ton of, I know we're really lucky to live where we live to kind of have that access to all that music and that range.
Yeah. There's a certain appeal to the Seattle sound, and obviously coming in very biased here. There is just something different about the bands that come out, like your Thunder Pussies, Hobosexual, even like Aaron Jones.
Yep.
Has got like this hip hop, but also it's almost like Nirvana meets hip hop meets like Jimi Hendrix,
right,
or something. Like there's all those influences there. And about the Walking Papers, like the fact that Duff McKagan is touring the world playing 60,000 person stadiums, then comes back and is playing like, you know, Showbox and whatnot with the Walking Papers, and you can go see like a legendary musician right there,
right,
is just unreal to me. And very different sound. And even I'm a big Guns nut, so I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole and then get into the LA scene, but it's really neat, and I really need to see those acts as well.
But no matter what genre you play, and I mean Seattle is known for big music place, LA is known for big music space, but no matter what band you are, there is a space for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're a country band in Seattle, you just gotta go up to like Tractor Tavern or something. You gotta go a little bit north, like there's space.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like, and if for whatever reason you can't find it, you can make it.
Right.
You can create your own event, and then you find some like-minded people. There's nothing wrong with approaching a talent buyer. And if you're like, here's the three bands we want to play with, can we set this bill up? And it might be you get a Monday night at 9 o'clock, but you got to start somewhere.
You got a Monday night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, like you said, it's all there. A lot of it's research, in, as you said, finding the right people, seeing how you can help them, because you're going to move up a lot faster if you're doing it as a crew.
Exactly.
So yeah, as far as acts, this might tie in to what you already just said, is there an act like you're most excited about in the local scene?
I think the ones that I get most excited about are those bands that I have heard of and do listen to, like Hobosexual or Thunder Pussy. But there was one that hit a little more closer to home that was it's rare occasions, but when there's some sort of larger act that does a smaller show. My best example was, it was a weird situation, but where Death Cab for Cutie changed their lineup, they did a show at Crocodile.
Oh wow.
And so I got, by some luck and grace of God, I got to go to that. And tickets were like $16. It was just like,
oh,
so
no way.
It was just like they got on stage like, hey, we just wanted to do this show to like do a show and also to show you that like we're still the same kind of thing. And that was just an evening that like will not be forgotten. And I mean, the same can go for any artist that you get to see in kind of that more intimate space, where they do just kind of make it their own, or even in a larger space. But for local acts, it's something where I think I hear them on KEXP or I hear them on some avenue, and then I look them up on Google and I see, oh, they're playing at Numo's in like 2 weeks. I can get a ticket. I think that's kind of the most exciting to me, is it's like, here's this thing I just discovered, and it's like they're in my backyard.
Yeah.
And I can go see them like right now. I think there's some sort of unique joy that comes with that, where it's like you feel special because like I didn't hear this from 60 other people.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I found them, you know, I'm into them, and this is a thing that I really enjoy.
Right.
It kind of builds, it's this unique sell. But I think those are the shows that I get the most excited about, are those ones that you discover yourself.
Mm-hmm. My last question here, do you have a favorite local song? Is there a song that you've just been spinning constantly from one of these bands that you've discovered?
Oh, man. Favorite local song that I've just been listening to. That's a good question.
We can cheat and go up to bigger bands that are coming out of Seattle, too, if need be.
Yeah, cheat and go up the ladder. Let me think about that one. I think the one that I've been listening to a lot recently is by Hobosexual off their new album. It's called Trans Am Sunday, but it just that their new album is like this metal concept thing, but it's just the sound they've made with just being two guys is nuts.
Yeah.
But Trans Am Sunday, it's a very good song. I really recommend it, but it kind of encapsulates that more industrial Seattle sound.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the one that I've been listening to a lot recently.
Nice. I'll definitely have to, what I'll do here is I'm gonna take like a my collaborate with you on like a playlist or something, and maybe we can put that out into the ether of like, here's the bands that you need to know about that we're talking about.
Right.
I'll put that up there. Cool. Well, thanks so much for coming on out. I really appreciate you doing this. It's awesome to be able to have like someone else's perspective come on in here, and because it's important for musicians and producers like to understand, okay, who are we talking to? How do we get there? So I appreciate you coming in and giving that perspective. And
of course, it's good to get that collaborative environment. And then stuff someone says, so you're like, oh yeah, wait, that's a good thing. Or like you kind of bounce off each other. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Cool, totally. Well, thanks, man. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right, that was Love Is by Dude York off their album Sincerely, which was distributed by Sub Pop Records, Seattle's label. As well, I want to give a huge thanks to Paul for his patience and sitting on this episode for a couple months now. But it's perfect timing because Avengers Infinity War just dropped. We've been going back and forth all week. And if you want to listen to the artists that we've been discussing during these episodes, follow Made for Music on Spotify, as we're actually going to be putting together playlists comprised of the songs that we discuss on both the local and national level. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please go ahead and rate us on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. We really appreciate y'all helping us out there, and we will see you next time.